You're listening to KVMR FM, Nevada City, and I've got Carl Dobkins Jr. on the phone with me right now. Good evening, Carl.
Hi, Brian. How are you and all the listeners at KVMR?
Well, I think we're doing pretty good. We're doing good. Carl, normally I'm so chronological with this stuff that I like to start at the beginning, go to the end, but I'm just intrigued with the fact that you have just released a brand new CD. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, just released. It's called Cruising with Carl. And one of the neatest things about the CD is the pictures on the CD. I'm standing in front of a 57 Chevy, which is like the icon of the 50s cars. And then on the back cover is a 57 T-Bird. A friend of mine from the church I attend had these things. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do some oldies, you know, might be able to sell the CDs to the women. But what'll catch the guy's eyes is the CDs with the cars on it. You can't miss that red 57 Chevy.
It's a great shot. You've got a great pose right next to it.
Thank you.
What made you decide to release a CD?
Well, my son-in-law kind of prodded me into it. He owns DBW Sound. His name is David Bain White. And he did all the producing and a lot of the mixing and some of the guitar tracks and the other tracks. And he said, let's do another CD. We have done one back in 2001. Now, that was a million seller, Brian. I still have a million of them in my cellar. Anyway, it's fun to do. I'm basically retired. I keep my suitcase packed, so if I get a call, I'm ready to go. I did a cruise last winter with Freddie Cannon, who that one of the first bus tour I went on was with Freddie. The first time I did the Dick Clark show, it was with Freddie. So it was kind of a real reunion, and also Jimmy Rogers was on there, and a super nice guy. And of course, Freddie Cannon, the flapper, as we used to call him, was the same old guy.
So you've got a CD out, and even though we'll review this at the end of the interview, where is it that folks could go learn more about that?
Well, if you do a search on my name, CarlDobkinsJr.com, on Google, probably the very first thing that will pop up is the Internet Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm sorry, Rockabilly Hall of Fame. And you can click on there, and it goes right to a web page that Mr. Timmers had created for me, and there's a link right there where you can go to buy the CD. If you don't want to go that route, you can go to dbwsound.com. That's like David Bain White Sound.com. It's available on there. It's also available on iTunes, Amazon, Rhapsody, eTunes, LALA.com. And go on there and do a search of my name, and it'll pop up, and you can just buy the tracks and download them. Either way you go with it, that's fine. If you go to the DBW Sound, I'll send out a personally autographed copy to you.
Wow. We're going to get back to the CD a little bit later on, but let's talk about some history here. Where are you from, and what first got you interested in music?
Well, I'm from Cincinnati, born and bred here, lived here all my life, married my high school sweetheart. We've been married, it's going to be 48 years this September. She's never thought about divorce. She's thought about homicide a couple of times, but not divorce. We have two daughters, five grandchildren, and it's great being a granddaddy, I'll tell you that. But anyway, I was working in the bakery after school, and I had made $10 a week, and I didn't have a date and any place to spend it, so I went down and made a little acetate dub of a couple of songs that I had written, and a couple of friends of mine knew of this disc jockey who would do remote shows from a little Volkswagen bus. So they said, well, you think we can get him to play the record? So we went to a fireman's festival that he was broadcasting from, and he played it, became interested in me and my music, and started promoting me. So through him, I got a contract with Fraternity Records here in Cincinnati, and then Decca Records later on, and that's the label on which My Heart's an Open Book had received a gold record for, was recorded on. So that's basically how I got into it.
Ah, the DJ. Was that actually Gil Shepard?
Right, Gil Shepard.
Do you remember which radio station he was at?
He was just about on every radio station in Cincinnati. I think he was on either WCPO or WCKY when he had a program called Yours for the Asking, and it was a call-in request program. And he had this little Volkswagen bus, and he would go around. There was a chain of drive-in restaurants called the Big 60-Second Shop. You get a hamburger in 60 seconds, I guess that's what it was. And he would pull his little Volkswagen bus into this parking lot, plug into the phone line, and play records, and the kids would all hang out and request their songs.
Now, the records that you recorded for Fraternity, Take Hold of My Hand, and That's Why I'm
Asking.
Yeah, That's Why I'm Asking. Those were both written by you, correct?
Yes, those were the first ones I had on Fraternity, and actually the first one that I had on Decca, If You Don't Want My Lovin' and Love Is Everything, are songs that I had written also. And they released that first on Decca, and, you know, it was number one 6 weeks in a row in Charleston, West Virginia. I was an honorary citizen. They met me with a motorcade. You know, you go out 50 miles outside of Charleston, West Virginia, no one ever heard of. But it would cause enough noise to keep Decca interested in me, and then that's when I went to Nashville and recorded My Heart's an Open Book, really Lucky Devil, Exclusively Yours, and then they had re-released If You Don't Want Me Lovin'. In fact, the Fraternity record with Kathy Carr, the owner of the record company, kind of squeezed me in at the end of her recording session, and the Jordanaires were there, and they were going to be leaving to go play sing with Elvis Presley in Hawaii or somewhere. And boy, I was just an amazed little kid. I think I was 17 at the time. I think, wow, these guys are going to see Elvis.
Wow. And that was in Nashville?
Yeah, that was in Nashville, the Owen Bradley studio. That's where I recorded most of the things that I had released.
Well, My Heart is an Open Book. I mean, that was just a monster. You know, got up to number 3 on the pop charts, spent almost a half a year on the charts. No wonder it was a gold record. It was a very popular record.
Yeah, the funny thing about that is that when it came out, people had the mindset that Decca Records were hillbilly artists, as they used to call it. It wasn't country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my manager would try to get me appearances at record hops in Detroit and Cleveland and larger towns like that. And I said, with a promotion man who worked for Decca, and they would say, oh, no, we don't do hillbilly artists. So finally he talked to someone, and it was Clay. Tom Clay, was it? The big disc jockey? And
yeah, I believe that's it, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we went there to the Light Guard Armory in Detroit, and it was, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 kids at this huge armory, which was back then was just an unheard of crowd. And I pantomimed, that's what you usually do, get up, pantomime your song. A couple of weeks later, they called back, hey, you got to come back, the record's getting to be a hit. And went back, and there was like 6 record hops, 2 of which were across the river in Canada, that I did them one night.
Wow.
So from there, spread to Cleveland and other markets. But it had been out on the market that the record actually had been released 6 months prior to that. So when it started hitting, the company had to mail out the disc jockey copies again because they'd been tossed in the garbage.
Huh. So it sat long enough that everybody had gone on to something else, yeah. And here it came again.
In fact, I just ran across, I was looking through our basement, and there was a book written by Joel Wilburn. He writes some of these books about Billboard magazine. And I recall that in the article, the preface of the book, or preface, however you pronounce it, said that during the period, it was the top 1,000 records from 1955 to 85. And it said during this time, there were over 100,000 records released. Mm. So when I looked and found mine in somewhere at the 900 and some slot, I thought, well, that may look good, but our bad is 900 and some out of 1,000. But if 100,000 of them were released, that's great. I made the top 1,000.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty darn good.
And it's strange that in there that some of them... Delta Dawn is an example. You would think of the country artist that originally did it when she was 14 years old. Can't think of her name right offhand. But it wasn't her. It was Helen Reddy's version of it, I think it was, that mm-hmm. made the book. So it was based on sales. And the surprising thing is that Chuck Berry, to whom me is an icon in rock and roll, only had one listed in there, and it was My Ding-a-Ling. And when was that, 1970 or something?
Yeah, that was the early 70s.
But Johnny B. Goode, which every guitar player in the world has to learn that before you're called a guitar player, it wasn't in there. But it's strange.
So you appeared on Dick Clark's Bandstand like 14 times, and you didn't mess around getting there the first time, did you?
No, the day after my graduation from high school in 1959 was on the appearance of Dick Clark Show, and the first appearance was on the Saturday Night Show, which was big time. The little theater from New York, you had your own dressing room, and a person would put makeup on you, and there was a guy whose sole job was to hold up the little package of gum. What was it, Wrigley Spearmint?
Oh,
in front of the camera. So I don't know how much he got paid for that, but that'd be a great job. All you have to do is hold up, I guess, because of his good-looking hand. But Dick Clark, what you saw was what you got. Super nice guy, would come around and thank everyone on the show. Thank you for being on my show. I appreciate you coming.
Huh.
And, you know, you'd give your right arm to be on that show.
That was probably Beechnut gum, wasn't it?
Beechnut, you're right. Where did I get Wrigley Spearmint? I guess my senior hard disk drive brain skipped the sector.
So you had that as a huge hit. You were touring. You were the Bandstand, the Beechnut Show. What was your follow-up?
Actually, they had to re-release If You Don't Want My Lovin', the one that made the big hit in Charleston, West Virginia. And it hit like 98 or somewhere rather on the top 100. But then I had to do a stint of 6 months in the Army, because part of a reserve, Army Reserve or a National Guard obligation. I come out and then did a release of The Lucky Devil. Well, it made the charts pretty good.
Mm-hmm,
then I had Exclusively Yours. That was another one that made it into the chart. But the music changed. The Beatles came along, changed the whole thing. You can always tell someone's approximate age because when they say, oh, you used to sing, huh? What group were you with? Because the Beatles changed it all. But anyway, I settled down to a day job type life, raised our children, two girls, and like I said, would occasionally go out on the road to do a show and enjoyed it. God's been good to me over the years. Had good health, great wife, great family, friends, and people who email me still from all over the world saying, hey, we remember your song, we love your songs, and you know, that's terrific. You think how many other thousands of talented people that really tried hard and never got the opportunities that I did.
So tell me, who were the Seniors?
The Seniors were a local group here that, I forget what they originally called themselves, that were the vocal backups on If You Don't Want My Lovin', the first record that we sold to Decca. During the recording session, which was at King Studio, I don't know if you're familiar with King, I mean, that was James Brown and Sid Nathan owned that company. It's an iconic type thing in Cincinnati. Because it was a mail order, primarily a mail order business. You could get a record in the front door and out the back within a day, pressing, shipping, the whole department. But anyway, you had the studio there, and we told the guy, said, "Hey, look, if, you know, if we sell this record, we can pay you. If not, it'd just be good experience for you." But my manager said, "Let me see. We've decided to call you Carl Dopkins Jr. Let's call them the Seniors." Ironically, we're all seniors now.
Yeah. Paul Evans, what was he doing singing demos for you anyway?
I don't know. I just emailed him the other day asking me if he'd give me a plug on his website. If you go to his website, there's a little blurb in there about me that he was making the dubs, as we call them, you know, the demo records, and I was making the hits out of them. And then he stopped making dub. He made a hit on his own, and I stopped getting his records. He sent me to YouTube, and I clicked on the YouTube, and I went, and it's got the thing when he was on the Dick Clark Show, I believe it was. Yeah, it was, because Dick Clark was one of the little puppets in the back, sitting in a car, you know, sitting in the back seat, hugging and kissing with Fred. And it was cute. They had the little girl puppets, and then there was a puppet that looked like Dick Clark. He's quite a guy, very talented. If you go to his website, paulevans.com, you'll see all the great songs that he wrote. Really talented.
So when I listen to some of your songs, I kind of get the feeling that you almost had a country song that you're putting some pop influences into. Am I reading it wrong, or was there any intent there?
I think it was probably influenced from the fact that, you know, I came from sort of a country-type background. My parents were from Kentucky, and you had the old, what they called hillbilly music back then, and those were some of the earliest songs that I learned. Then you were in Nashville, so that had that particular sound to it, too. I know that some of the songs that were big bombs, I wish I could have sold them and they could have used them in Iraq. Johnny Tillotson, which, by the way, is another real nice guy, he came out with some things in the, like, 63, somewhere around in there, and had some great hits with them. With that same sound, you know, it keeps on a hurtin', and someone would call me and say, "Hey, Carl, I heard your new record. It keeps on hurtin'." That's about mine. But I'm glad he had success with them.
Well, about that time, you had at least one release on ATCO and another one on Colpix, right?
Uh-huh.
And that was just an after the Beatles have hit and let's try it again kind of a thing, huh?
Yeah, there was a guy in the Brill Building in New York City that had the recording sessions, and then he would sell the master to ATCO. Then the Colpix was on the West Coast. We went out there, had a great big session, French horns and all this and that, because this guy, the president of the record company, really believed in me. And I come back, and I was all enthused. This is probably 65, somewhere around there. Anyway, come back, and then I looked in the trade magazine, and he'd been let go, and the person who took over the record company, needless to say, did not release my big session record. There would be no feather in his cap if it made it, and detrimental to his new career if it didn't make it. So, But it was an experience.
I thought that there was actually a release on Colpix called "His Loss Is My Gain," but
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was the first one. I remember that because I went on an all-car tour in the South promoting the record with a guy by the name of Eddie Kilroy. What a character! The guy was about 6'5", dyed black hair that looked like a sort of like Elvis, and drove this big old dark blue Cadillac with temperature control air conditioning heating, which was like, wow. And he was afraid to fly, so we drove all over the South promoting that. A couple of good songs, but no sales.
What's the first thing you think of, backing up just slightly, when I say the song Sawdust Dolly?
I back up thinking about that. It was banned because they thought I said a dirty word.
Oh, no.
Yes, yes. Twisting and strolling. They thought it said the word that started with S-C-R-E-W and
I don't
say anymore. And I said, no, why? Back then, it would be murder to put a song out intentionally with a dirty word in it. It was too late. Somebody put the kibosh on it.
And you had an LP that came out? It was very nice.
I had an LP that was, one side was mine and one side was Brenda Lee, and it was strictly a promotional type copy. If you bought a dress that was made out of a fiber from the Sullivan's Corporation at that time, you got a free CD from Brenda and I.
That was the Date Setters one, right?
Right. Right. Boy, I tell you know your stuff. I'd have swapped chairs with you to let you do the interview.
Tell me about the couple of releases on the Chalet label.
Chalet label, that was owned by a guy by the name of Bobby Bobo, who was on a live type country and western program here in Cincinnati, Midwestern Hayride. And he moved to Nashville, and he bought this record company, or started the record company. And I got a call one day, and, oh, hey, you got to come down and record this. This is the next Honey record. We need somebody with kind of a Bobby Goldsboro voice. And, you know, so I went down, and it was a real trip recording with kids. You know, they'd lean over the microphone, hey, Dad! There's the guy who drums. And it was a great song, and it was The Days of Sand and Shovel. And there were three people other than myself that recorded it. There was Waylon Jennings, who wasn't a big country star at the time, a Don Cherry, and Bobby Vinton. And it was on Epic, Bobby's was. And so he called the Epic Records and said, the owner or whoever it was, the person there, said, you know, gee, I don't want to spend money and release this record if Bobby Vinton, because, you know, Bobby was still pretty hot, said, if we're going to release it, oh, no, it's not going to be released. It'll just be a cut on an album, you know. No problem. Go ahead, release the record. Well, we released it, and Bobby Vinton released his, and there was a thing placed, a guy by the name of Drake that had what they call the Drake Syndication. That's not a mafia outfit. It's a thing you probably know where people during that period of time would kind of program for all these radio stations.
Right.
Whatever they said to play is what you play.
Right.
Because they were the guru. And this, he said, oh, new record, Days of Sand and Shovel, Bobby Vinton's play it. That submarine.
Oh, yeah. Drake, he was actually involved in some of the original color radio formats.
Oh, yeah. I remember color radio. Shed Woolley beat the Purple People Eater beat out my first record on Fraternity. On Pick of the Week, Color Pick of the Week, or whatever it was.
Oh.
Shed Woolley, Purple People Eater. Oh, darn. Keep my record out.
So did Gil Shepard, backing up again, really term you as the teenage rage?
Yeah, I don't know how he came up with that. He was quite an innovative guy. Super guy. I miss him. He passed away. Oh, gee, it's been 20, 25 years ago.
Well, let's get back to your CD. Looking at the tracks, I see a few songs in there that I associate with Buddy Holly. Is he one of your favorites as well?
Yeah, I like his music. And as I state on the album cover, that we were the first rock and roll show to play that Surf Ballroom after the unfortunate accident with him and the other guys. And I don't know, I on my original album with Decca, I had put Raining in My Heart. So a lot of his songs are just, you know, my favorite. They're so poetic, and they're easy to sing, and good music, and people like Buddy Holly stuff. So I thought, well, I'll stick with the winner. There's one song on there, the Good Old Rock and Roll, which has little snippets from four different old 50s songs, you know, Blue Suede Shoes and three other ones. And I searched all over the Internet trying to find who wrote the Good Old Rock and Roll. And finally, I was with this cruise show I did in February. Rooming next to me was, and I hate to use this dirty word, but I hope you'll permit it, an XM radio disc jockey, Matt Cat. He was rooming next door, and I tell him, I said, I'm trying to find out who wrote this thing, because we don't want to put out a CD without buying mechanical license and digital downloading license. So he put me on to the place to go and find it. So I finally found it. But my son-in-law says, when he sent me, showed me the bill for all of the rights to these. He said, you know what this tells me? And I said, what? He says, do your own songs. Because you have to pay for every one you do. And that when having five different songs on it was the same as doing one, whether you use a little bit or a whole bunch.
Mm.
That's the previous CD we had in 2001, which also is available on iTunes and Amazon and at dvwsound.com. That was some of the stuff I had written myself, a remake of Open Book, kind of a mixture there. But this, the latest one, The Cruising with Carl, is all oldies. Kind of my last hurrah, I guess.
Do you have a favorite cut on that?
I like Lost in the 50s. That actually is not in itself an oldie song. It was, the original was written, you know, the In the Still of the Night. And actually people call that song, but it, the real title is I'll Remember.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by, the Five Satins.
Mm-hmm.
And Paris was, I think, evidently one of, I don't know if he was one in the group or what. But he wrote the original thing and the tune and the shadoop and doobie doop. And then an ex-football player and songwriter by the name of Mike Reed wrote these verses to it and redid the whole song.
Right.
And I think it just kind of captures, usually if you're doing a show, a live show, you want to open with a fast song and close with a fast song. You know, upbeat, the very last thing, bang, 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 bang. But this thing is the only song I've ever seen that you can close the show with that. In fact, down we did a show at a radio station down in Jackson, Tennessee. I got a standing ovation for the song because it just takes people away.
Well, Carl, is there anything that I might have missed that you'd like to tell the audience here at KVMR-FM?
No, other than I certainly appreciate you being an oldies promoter and all of the people out there for listening. People like you that sometimes make life worthwhile and the effort worthwhile when you don't have some big gold record, at least you know there's people out there listening, and we certainly appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Carl, for taking time out to talk with me about your history and about your brand new CD.
Stay cool.